different parshas in Tanakh that deal with the story of the Ravah. And I assume you have some familiarity, probably more with the parsha in Shlach, which is this week's parsha, than with the parsha that's found in Sefer Yeshua. Literally, the first parak of Yeshua focuses on this issue as well. And if you just even read the psukim in a very cursory kind of way, you'll see a great divide between the two descriptions, the one that's found in Shlach and the one that's found in Sefer Yeshua. I'll just talk about this week's parsha, just read a few psukim, which if you have a chumash there, that would be a bad idea. Maybe I should have Xerox, at least the text, but I didn't do so, I'm sorry. So I'll read the text to you, and if you are familiar with it, great. And if not, hopefully you'll hear a little bit what we're talking about. The Torah says, "Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe l'emor shlach lecha anoshim," that Moshe was told to send people, "v'yasuru aseres kenan." That's a very significant word that the Torah uses. "V'yasuru aseres kenan." How do you translate that word? So that word, by the way, Rashi right away connects that word at the end of the parsha. I assume you're familiar with the fact that at the end of Shlach, the Torah has the parsha Tzitzis. And there you undoubtedly remember, because we say daily, that term is used on a daily basis. Lo sasuru, achrei levatim, achrei nevet. Rashi right away comments over there, lo sasuru, that one should not be diverted by one's eyes, by one's heart. So on the spot, Rashi connects that pasuk to the pasuk that I just began with a moment ago, namely, v'yasur aseres kenan. So what does that word mean? And it's fascinating that you know the English word, which might be a description or might be a translation of that, is Moshe Rabbeinu telling the Rambam to go ahead and v'yasur. How do we translate v'yasur? If you translate to tour the land, yasuru, lashon tour, that's not the correct translation. How would you translate the word v'yasur aseres kenan? What would you mean in your translation? He knows Hebrew. Yeah?
To search.
Excellent. That's a better translation. Far better. Because essentially, it's a mission. It's a mission of 12 shvatim and 12 tribes, if you will, to, I guess you would say in English, reconnoiter the land, which means, as you said, to search. And they're supposed to examine its topography, supposed to examine its economic potential. I'll just read the psukim. Vayishlach al son Moshe, and then the Torah lists them, and then the Torah says, Vayishlach al son Moshe, again, the second time, Losur, Aseres Kenan, or you would say Lotur, correct? Vayomer aleim, aluzeh banegev, valiseh mesahor. Uriseh mesahor is mahi, means examine the land. Ve'asahama yoshev aleim, what kind of individuals occupy the land, namely the constituency? Hechazoku ha'rafam, yatu v'rav, are they strong? Are they weak? Umaris Ashehuda Sheba Hatobahim Ra, what's the nature of this land? Is it fertile in terms of its productivity and the like? Umarim Ashehuda Sheba, you know, what about the cities? Are they fortresses? It's like living in the Jewish community in South Africa, where essentially they're in fortresses. Umaharat Sashmenahim Raza, Ayesh Baitzim Ayin, is it, are there a lot of trees? And you should take samples. Ulakatan of Piaretz, Vayamin, you may be going on a bit. And then again, the Torah says, Vayalu, Vayasur Esaretz. That's the third time the verb is used. So obviously that verb is critical. In general, whenever you learn Tanakh and you see a language that occurs and recurs many, many times, you have to focus on that. I'm sure you are a product of Rabbi Yisrael Feld Shlita, and that's what he does. He examines text very carefully, as we are, all of us should do. So the Torah uses that word, and then a few psukim later, Vayashuvu mitur haaretz. Again, the same word used the fourth time. They came back from the quote-unquote tour, T-O-U-R, and they report back to Moshe Rabbeinu. So if you examine the psukim, you see that essentially the mission is to find out about the land. Is it fruitful? Is it not fruitful? And the Rambam devote how many days to this task? 40 days. 40 days they're involved in this mission, and then they report back. And here's the language of the report. I'll just share with you a little bit of that. It's a land flowing with milk and honey, and they also display some of the fruit that they saw in the land. But there's one word that Rambam claims was the chet. Which word was that? It's a kind of disclaimer. Efes. Ki azam. What do they say a moment later? Everything is wonderful and dandy, but It's occupied by giants, and they're living in a, essentially in fortresses that are impregnable, that are not conquerable. Ki asa hom ha-yoshe ba-aretz ve-arim b'tzirot b'dalot b'yod b'yam yiludeha ha-anok ra'im sham. And so basically, by virtue of that statement, what were they trying to do? To dissuade us from essentially going to Eretz Yisrael. So quickly, two of the Meraglim, or two of the Shvatim, they're also Meraglim, namely Kolob and Yeshua, by the way, enter the scene. Vayahas Kolob Yisrael Meloshe. By the way, Kolob immediately tries to dispel the kind of pall that they created by making the following answer. We can do it. We can conquer Eretz Yisrael. Ki yochel luchalo. But right away, the Torah describes what was their reaction. Impossible. They will overwhelm us. They're too strong. It's impossible. And what happened was the Lashon Hara that was spread by the majority of the Meraglim was so insidious and so overpowering, they succeeded in essentially creating a kind of groundswell against their end. Their entry to Eretz Yisrael. That's what the says next. By Yotziu Dibas Ha'aretz Asher Toru Osa. Fifth time the word is used. They basically said Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael. Aretz Asher Avadu Bad Lasur Osa. The sixth time. Eretz El Cheles Yisraeli. It's a land that simply eats up its inhabitants. They always make a joke about it. Anyone who wants to go to the rabbin, so they describe the rabbin as Eretz El Cheles Yisraeli. Rabbin is a land that eats up its inhabitants. It means the rabbis who occupy the position of being rabbi. That's just a joke. And then you go on, and as a result, the Torah goes on in Perek Yidal. They began to cry. That's the night that the Gemara describes in Tainus. Some people here learn myself as Tainus. Atem b'chisem b'chia b'chinam ani give you a b'chia l'doros as Tisha B'Av that night in Raglan. And essentially, as a result of what they did, it led to many, many complaints, and the main complaint, the Torah says, I'll read here, something again, they complained to Moshe Rabbeinu, we should have died in Egypt, or better, we should die in the desert rather than go to Eretz Yisrael. Why is Hashem bringing us here? We're going to fall by the sword. Tov lanu shuv mitzrayim ba. By Yom Kippur, and then became the, I would say, even the groundswell. Every movement needs some sort of promotional theme. What was their theme? Nisna Rosh, Yeshua Mitzrayim. Let's go back to Mitzrayim. Go back to Egypt. So even though Yeshua and Kalei valiantly tried to stem the tide, the result of the Meraglim debacle was, as you know, they were destined to die in the Midbar in the course of the 40-year period of the nation. They're going to die there. This is the parasha over here in Shlach. If you look in Sefer Yeshua, which I also I actually did Xerox then. In Sefer Yeshua, you have how many spies were sent?
Two.
Shnayim Anashim Meraglim. Secondly, their identity is quickly discovered. They were told to go, they go to the house of Rachel, who was a well known courtesan, well known zona. Vayishkiru Shoma. And then the king found out about it. And right away, he instructs Rachel that she should remain there to the custody of the authorities. Rachel, however, does not do so because she saw the Yad Hashem. She saw that clearly that's what's happening. Klal Yisrael is accompanied by Hashem Yisrael. She said, "Till then, Yodati, Kinasan Hashem Lachem Sa'aretz, V'kinofle Masam Aleinu, and they're all going to melt right in front of you. Ki Shamanu Es Asher Hovish Hashem, Esme Yamsu Ben Dechem, and what you did, etc." And therefore, she said, "Ki Hashem Elokeinu Hu Elokim Hashemayim Emal Ve'Alas Mitachas." As a result, she hid them successfully, and she secreted the Ram away from the would-be captives. When you look at this parsha and compare it to the parsha in Shlach, so I just want to draw some analogies and some fundamental distinctions between the two aforementioned episodes. In Sefer Yoshua, the identity of the Meraglim is immediately uncovered. They didn't achieve their goal. They barely escaped, but they were able to escape because she assisted them, Rachel. She was the one who provided them with cover. In the Meraglim episode of Shlach, they were eminently successful. 40-day mission, and the mission, of course, was essentially mission accomplished. They returned with a wealth of information, a wealth of data. But the irony is that the aborted mission was executed by two anonymous Meraglim. And the Meraglim of Shlach were 12 distinguished heads of Shmotim, heads of the tribes. Here you have two Meraglim, Shnayim Anoshim Meraglim. The Navi doesn't identify them, doesn't disclose who they are, their identity, doesn't divulge who they are. We have no idea who they are. And the Meraglim of Shlach of the Torah operated in the open for a period of 40 days. The Meraglim of Yeshua operated, as the Pasuk says, Cheresh. What does Cheresh mean? Undercover. They were completely and totally camouflaged. But the main differences, I would say, lies in the language that I referred to earlier, and I want to show you the distinction between the language of Shlach and the language of Sefer Yeshua. Here, in Sefer Yeshua, the term is that the Torah uses to describe, that Navi describes, Lachbor Esoretz. What did they come to do? How do you translate the word Lachbor? Lachbor means to Chafira, to dig. Excellent. But essentially, in Sefer Yeshua, the objective is a military one. Lachbor et Aretz. Even Bismanenu Anu, even today, in modern Hebrew, that's the term that's used to describe the military kind of mission. Namely, we want to uncover the Achilles heel, want to cover their weak points, strategically where they're weak, and this way it would facilitate our ability to enter that area and to assure its conquest. However, the Meraglim of the Torah were not mandated to do that. They were mandated to paint some ideal picture of Eretz Yisrael that Hashem already testified to its goodness. Do you remember what did Yeshua and Kol say? Tovah Haaretz Ma'od Me'od. The land is great. The land is outstanding. And the Ramban writes over here, and the Ramban said that Hashem sent these Meraglim l'samcham. What does it mean, l'samcham? To essentially gladden the hearts of those Jews who are going to ultimately inhabit the land. That was the whole idea. The idea of the mission was not to spy out the terrain, not so much to gain a military advantage, because then he would have sent professional career army scouts, professional generals. He did do that. He sent 12 princes, 12 to see it. So it's clear that that was not the intent. So what was the intent? They should be captivated, they should be riveted, they should be won over by the beauty of the land, creating excitement for it, create a simcha for it. That was the intent. That's what the Ramban writes over here in Dr. Dabat Shlach. And basically, if you ask me, the two missions, they're diametrically opposed to each other. One mission is essentially a military mission. That's the one that's found in Yeshua. Lachbor, that's indicated by that language. And here the mission is of a totally different nature. The mission over here is to excite them and to literally try to create such a beautiful picture of Eretz Yisrael that there'd be no reason for them not to want to conquer Eretz Yisrael. So the Meraglim of the Shlach, as you see, return and unfortunately indicate that this country is not possible to conquer it. There's no way. It's immune from conquest. The people living there are giants, impregnable fortresses, as I mentioned before. So instead of strengthening their resolve, instead of strengthening their love for the land, they succeeded in forging panic and depression and melancholia. They incited against Eretz Yisrael. And the truth is, if you examine carefully the text, you can see nuances of this in the text of the Chumash itself. It's very interesting. I'm very into language, as I've indicated many, many times. So besides the language of Yasur, Eretz Kenan, in the very beginning, so Moshe Rabbeinu says then, and he tells them, Alu Zeh Baregeh. What's the Lashon of Alu? Alu is Lashon of Aliyah. Are you cold?
I wasn't cold, you turn on.
Alu Zeh Baregeh Ba'aliseh Besohor. The language of Aliyah is the term that's used. What does Aliyah mean? Ascend. Go up. Correct? And we read the early Psukim, that language occurs and recurs many, many times. The language of Aliyah, the language of going up.
Sit down, sit
down. No, you have to wait 5 minutes. Oh, that's the way it works over here. It's a what's called by the Gemara in Makis, Ramban Barigash, Yubida, Mitzvah Aliyah. You have to go down, and then in order to eventually once again go up. Okay, but anyway, the language of Aliyah is the term that's used over here, and that's the spirit. But then, the moment the Meraglim come into the picture, and they give this dismal report, and they basically create a kind of depression, and a kind of terrible saddening and melancholia. So then look at the language of the pasuk. The pasuk changes, and now it says, "V'gamra'inu eshat nefilim." What are the filim? Elu shenaflu. And Lam Hashem devi asan limpo lacheret. Why does Hashem want us to fall? And then, "V'amibra azeh yiplum friblechem." Language of Tefillah goes from Aliyah to Nefilah, and that transformation is essentially the quintessence of the tragedy of the Rambam, and is in stark contrast to the language that's used in Sefer Yoshua. So I just wanted to contrast, just to show you the drawn analogy by way of contrast between the language, the terminology used over here in Shlach, and the terminology used over there in Parshas Yoshua, the Sefer Yoshua. Those basically you have two different missions. One is a military mission, which ultimately succeeds. Meraglim, who have no name, their identity is not disclosed. The language that's used is the language of Lach Bor, which means a military kind of mission. And here, we have 12 Nasiim, 12 Shvatim, not generals, not scouts, not people who have expertise in conquering other countries, but they're supposed to be Sameach, create an atmosphere of excitement, of Simcha. Instead, the opposite occurs, and we go from Aliyah to Nefilah, and that's all reflected in the language of the Torah. So there's a very stark contrast between the two. There's a very fascinating Gemara in Saita. The Gemara is troubled by the following pasuk, which is very difficult. The pasuk says, when they came back, the Rambam, not Yeshua and Kalev, obviously, all the others, and they reported back to Moshe Rabbeinu and to Klal Yisrael, so they say the following. Bisham Ra'inu, it's in Perek, you give a pasuk on the Gemara, the last pasuk in that Perek. Bisham Ra'inu, at Tanafilim, Bnei Adam and Tanafilim, we saw these giants, these massive giants. And you know what we were like? Look at this next segment of the pasuk. Vanihi Be'inenu Kachagobim. Translated? We were in our eyes as grasshoppers. We thought we were like grasshoppers. And so we were perceived by them as well. So of course the obvious question is, I can understand that a person feels he's a grasshopper relative to these giants. But how do they know how they're being perceived by others? What is the statement? What is the nature of that statement? So the answer lies in the profound psyche of a human being. This is my simple analysis. I'm an armchair psychologist. I never took even one course in psychology, but I have experience as a rabbi for many, many years, and I believe the answer is the following. The transgression of the rabbin is found upon the loss of their self-esteem. All of us have to have a sense of self-esteem, a sense of who we are, what value we have. Correct? All of us should see all the beautiful qualities that each one of us possesses, outstanding qualities. Sfaradim, Ashkenazim, we have others, other types of this yeshiva, I don't think so. Baruch Hashem, those two are sufficient to cover more or less the entire gamut. So there's so many beautiful aspects of the Sfaradic world, so many beautiful aspects of the Ashkenazic world, and each one of us personally, individually, has so many talents and so many qualities, each one different. Just like the physiognomies are different, the way we look, so too, our positions, our opinions, our hashkafot, correct? They're also different. So what happened over here is they lost their self-esteem, and usually people who are down on themselves, they will subconsciously project and even telegraph to others with their quote-unquote, as it's known as, body language. Body language is very significant. When a person is down, you can tell it by looking at their face, by seeing their features, by watching their body action. Are they alive? Are they kicking? Are they effervescent? Are they excited? Or they're just plain operating in a very down, sad kind of fashion, languishing and barely functioning and surviving? That's how people are. We tend to project where we're holding, to a large extent, with our body language. Sometimes the person is able to conceal it, to cover it up, but usually people cannot do so. And someone else who has sharp antenna will quickly get it. There's a famous pasuk in Mishlei. Tesis actually quotes this pasuk in Mishlei. Pasuk says, "Kimayim aponim lepanim." Tesis and I will talk. Otherwise, I won't bother you. "Kimayim aponim lepanim," as water reflects a face to another face. A person's heart is reflected back to him by another. So I want to just mention another comment that I saw from one of the Gedolei Rishonim, the Ran. The Ran has a sefer called Rosh HaTorah. I have to love that sefer. Not an easy sefer to learn, but a very beautiful sefer. That's Kedai to, and it's Hashem, after you finish Rabbi Yerushalmi and Dal Tavi Shemadar, then you can go ahead and use the Rosh HaTorah. Okay? You didn't even look at it before then. There's no Isur B'davar. But whatever the case is, so the Ran has something which is, I thought, incredibly striking. He makes a distinction between the Cheder HaMaraglim and the Cheder Egel. It would seem more fair if you look at the Cheder Egel, especially Rashi quotes Midrashim, you're probably familiar with Rashi. According to Rashi, what was the essence of the Cheder Egel? Rashi knows there were three major cardinal sins that he committed. Gidur HaRayos, Rehut Damim, HaMada Zorah. That's what Rashi writes. Vayakumu L'Tzachek, and that possibly. HaMada Zorah, idolatry. Shvich HaDomim, remember they killed poor when you're Rashi. According to Midrashim. And Gidur HaRayos, they committed all kinds of sexual promiscuity. So it would seem that that's far more heinous, translate the word heinous, far more criminal than the Cheder HaMaraglim. You know what the Cheder HaMaraglim is? Lashon Hara. Okay. It's a low sofa a lot. It's not a good thing, obviously. But is it as bad as the Cheder Egel? According to Rashi, which has the three cardinal sins? How do you account for the gargantuan discrepancy in the punishment? Namely, what happened to the Cheder Egel people? By Yom HaShem, Solachi Yidvarecha. He gave us a reprieve. We're forgiven. What happened over here? We're destined to wander 40 years in the desert. Essentially die in the desert. They even buried themselves. They dug their own graves. Who learned here in Maseches Titus? The end of Maseches Titus. Who learned in Maseches Balbasa? The Gemara Balbasa. They dug their own graves. How do you explain the difference? Comes the Ran and says something incredibly original and creative, according to my humble opinion. Generally speaking, every movement has to have a slogan, correct? Like, I don't want to use some of the slogans that are now very popular in the United States, that certain lives matter. Well-known slogan. You know the slogan, Jewish lives matter. Not familiar with that slogan? California, this is many months ago. If you remember, there were terrible, tragic ransacking of stores in California. I assume you're familiar what I'm talking about. Yeah. Including some people in my yeshiva, their parents were impacted. I don't know if you know all the details. I have to speak to one or two of them. Amazing. Just amazing. So clearly, Jewish lives don't matter. And Jewish property don't matter. So comes the Ran and says something incredibly striking. He says that what was the slogan of the Cheder Egel? I don't know if you remember the Tukim. Slogan of Kisi says, Ein Elohecha Yisrael, these are your gods, Israel. Asher He'elucha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. What language is clear? So the Ran said, He'elucha. He'elucha is from the Shom Aliyah. These are your gods that took you out of Egypt. Means what happened was they called Yisrael, went to Rabban, and Yileza, and Hasadigo, and most of the portion, they went into a panic. Moshe Rabbeinu was gone, their leader is gone, they're leaderless, they're rudderless. And what do you do without a leader? You just go into a panic. Moshe Rabbeinu said he's coming back, he didn't come back, and now they're in a, to quote my father, Moshe, they're in a pickle. That's an expression. They're in a difficult situation. So what do? They put together this golden calf, and the left of Israel, Asher Elucha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Of course, the whole thing is silly, foolish, absolute buffoonery, complete stupidity. Ubechalzo, people want to be so much on something, have to somehow hang the hat somewhere, so they hang the hat on this golden calf. That was silly. But that's what they did. But what was the slogan? Egel Hefer Yisrael. These are your gods who took you out of Egypt. At least they acknowledge the fact that they left Egypt. That's a good thing. And where are they going? They're going to Eretz Yisrael. That's a positive thing. But the language still bespeaks Aliyah, a direction to Eretz Yisrael, which is the beginning of Shlach. But you take a look at the Raglim, what do they say? Nit Narosh. Let's go back to Egypt. Egypt. Wow. Of course, I'm going to carry it away. Flatbush. Tina. L.A. Boca. Boca Raton. Gan Eden. Mansi here at Kodesh. So what do they say? They wanted to go back. That's a regression. That's a terrible regression. But basically, what does the Rambam say? That in one of the movements, namely the Chet HaEgel, the movement was towards Eretz Yisrael. Okay, they were using methodology that was incorrect, that was inappropriate. Namely the Golden Calf. But at least they were moving on an upward trajectory. Here, they want to go backwards. So, that's a sharp contrast between the Baragma of the Sefer Yeshua, that they accentuate the Hashkocha of Hashem, that's a Ruach of Shrest to them. Mashenkin over here, that is not exactly what happened. The very antithesis, the very opposite. And the fact of the matter is that Eretz Yisrael is not easy to acquire, as you undoubtedly are aware in the course of the period of time that you've been here. But our ability to integrate and to nurture a love for Eretz Yisrael is really a function of our attitude towards it. You have to develop a positive kind of attitude, you have to look for the pluses. I have a letter that I am very fond of, the Vilna Gaon, tried to get to Eretz Yisrael. He was unsuccessful. He wrote a letter to his family. He writes in that letter, I'm translating it from the Hebrew. He says, people travel for several years for monetary reasons. They leave their wives, they leave their families, they wander to and fro. Why? Because they want to essentially make money, put money in their pocket. I, Baruch Hashem, Nosea Me'eretz HaKdosha, I'm traveling to the Holy Land that everyone is desirous of seeing, Chemdas Kol Yisrael, the delight of all the Jewish people, the delight of all the heavenly entourage, Eretz Chemda Tov Rechava. But in order to have that sense, you have to long for it, you have to desire it, you have to cling to it. No simple matter. Rav Soloveitchik often, he drew an analogy, he drew a comparison to the following. And this is an obvious point. Namely, why was there a necessity to send out spies? Hashem told Moshe, Shachar V'Anoshim. Why? We know that Hashem already told Moshe Rabbeinu that Eretz Yisrael is beautiful. So Rav Soloveitchik gave the Moshe of my love over. The verse says in Kiddushin, in the second parak, the Gemara points out, you're not allowed to marry a woman until you see her. I assume you're familiar with that halacha. I don't think anyone in this room is a chassid, from what I can see. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, the chassidim have what they call, I don't think it's a fair statement, but they call it a shotgun marriage. Why is it a shotgun marriage? They present to you the kala, and then they say, with a shotgun, outside is the chuppah. I don't think you'd go for that. I don't think any of you would go for that. Not your cup of tea. No, it was in my cup of tea. I remember my Rebbe, I'm going to this one, Al-Gonzal. I once had the audacity to ask him, he married the daughter of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. Rebbe said, Alfred, she should have a Rechus Yom Roshonim. And he passed away, unfortunately, many, many years ago. The ultimate young man. So I asked him, how did he meet his wife? I'm curious, George. And curiosity killed the cat. And a few other things. So I asked him, one of my moments. So he told me the following. He was a very good natured person. I'm going to this mountain, so I'm a genius, and I'm going, and I'm tzaddik, and everything else. He tells me, here's what happened. I was called to my Rosh Hashiva, to Agana Moshe Feinstein, in the yeshiva to his office, and all of a sudden I see there another guy. Who's the other guy? Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg. So I see these two guys speaking to each other, and then Malaysia says to me, would you like to meet someone? So I didn't know what he had in mind. Meet someone means that I'm going to go out on a date with someone, or meet someone right now. So he asked his Rebbe, what does the Rebbe mean? What does Shiva mean? She said, to meet a young woman for the purpose of marriage. So he said, why not? So then Malaysia then opens up the next door. And guess who's there? This young woman, the daughter of Rabbi Scheinberg, one of the Dolei Hador. The daughter, he was shocked, he told me. Shocked. He didn't think she was going to be next door. And then he was afraid that Moshe was going to say the following. Okay, you'll meet her, and then we'll perform the chuppah right outside. That's not Rabbi Moshe. Finds things, that's all. No. Rabbi Moshe, don't worry. You'll go on dates with her. We'll take them out to see if they're compatible, if everything fits. Send us that, exactly what happened. And then subsequently, he, Baruch Hashem, he married her and they had a wonderful marriage. Unfortunately, he was nifter, relatively young man, who died actually 2 or 3 months after his wedding. He was a Moshe Feinstein. He's a musket of Moshe Feinstein and a Hesped. And he loved his father in Manhattan. What a Hesped. It's written up. Rabbi Teller published the Hesped. Chanoch Teller, Rabbi Roblaski's father-in-law. And then he himself passed away several months later. He had lung cancer, unfortunately, and his life was sort of short. I remember, this is also a true story, when I went to be Menachem Avdol, Dr. Sheinberg has a son who's a yeshiva in Torah Or. There's a yeshiva called Torah Or, have you heard of it? It has an American component as well. So when I went to Menachem Avdol, Dr. Sheinberg was nifter, so who was there? His oldest son, Rav Simcha Sheinberg, who's a yeshiva today of Torah Or. And then, who else was there? His sister, Rabbi Tin Alper. She also was came to herself to sit shiva with her brother. So Rabbi Sharma, whom I happen to know, Rabbi Simcha Sharma, turns to his sister and says to her, do you know this guy who just came to the Menachem Avdol? That's me, Avishai David. So she looks at me and she says, yeah, I know him, Simcha. He's that Nundek they used to call my husband at 1 o'clock in the morning. I thought that was a Shema. No, wasn't that a phrase? What would you say?
No, it's not a phrase.
Well, you're very blunt. Hashem, that's a good quality. Anyway, back over here. So, I view that as a Shema. I thought she was crazy. I'm just being cute, of course. So Leslie said, why was it necessary to send out spies when Hashem already promised that the land was going to be conquered? So there's Gemara Kedusha. Also, love the Kaddishah Seh Shat Shemana. That's what I'm talking about now. You can't marry a woman until you see her. You have to see what exactly where they're getting. If you remember, when Eliezer returned from his mission of finding a wife for Yitzchak, Pasha Chayisara, you do learn the Pasha, I assume, from time to time, Baruch Hashem. So what happened? So the Torah says that Vayivyeh Yitzchak Ha'ol HaSara, you know, at the end of the Pasha, that Yitzchak brings, essentially brings his wife, his future wife, into the tent of his mother Sarah. He wanted to see whether Rivka would be a worthy successor to his mother Sarah. So the famous Rashi. Rashi comments over there, Varehi Sarah Imo. That's Lashon Rashi, if you remember that. Varehi Sarah Imo, says Rashi, Vanaseh Dugmat Sarah Imo. That she, in effect, became the image of Sarah. Rashi quotes a Chazal, that as long as Sarah was alive, so the lamb would be lit from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos, and a bracha would be found in the dough, and a cloud would be stationed over the tent. When she died, that stopped, and when Rivka arrived, that resumed. So she knew that Yitzchak knew, apparently, he trusted Eliezer, trusted his father's faithful servant. He probably learned that parasha. Ubechozo, he wanted to observe the commandment of marrying a woman only if he had seen her. And that's exactly what happened over there. So I saw Mitzvah Kord, that's exactly what's happening over here. That Moshe did not simply want to impose Eretz Yisrael upon us, but he wanted to Ki'ilu, to show the beauty of Eretz Yisrael, like to show the beauty of a potential kala to her potential husband, in a similar kind of way. And that's exactly, I spoke about this actually this week, this past week, when I spoke about the connection between Moshe Rabbeinu trying to convince his father-in-law to join them in the trip, the trek to Eretz Yisrael, if you remember Leslie's Basha, about Losa, I told him, Losim, Anachno, Moshe was very excited. That Matthew Gershomer pointed out that at that point that Matthew had been told you're not going to go to Eretz Yisrael. And he was very excited. He wanted to get his father excited about it also. He should join him on his mission. So that's exactly what's happening over here in the Parsha of Shlach. So we see that the Parsha of Shlach actually is a very, very significant Parsha. And it's significant because that Eretz Yisrael, and you have had the great schus of being here, some of you longer, but all of you have been here for an extended period of time. And no question about it, I'm sure you have seen the singularity of Eretz Yisrael, the unique qualities of Eretz Yisrael, and there's so many beautiful, unique qualities of Eretz Yisrael, both in terms of the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, in terms of its sanctity, in terms of its holiness, and in terms of its so many different aspects of Eretz Yisrael that are really found only literally in this country. You can't find them anywhere else. So I'll mention a number of times. He actually referred to, he thought that, and he compared actually the two Pashas. Rashi quotes in the very beginning, Lo Menisvach HaPashas Miriam, the end of Al-Osa, to the Pasha of Meraglim. So Rashi says over here, because Miriam was punished because Lashon Hara, she issued against a brother, and these sinners, namely the Rambam, witnessed it, and then they take a lesson. You know, essentially what Rashi is saying, what was their chet? Lashon hara. Just like Miriam said Lashon hara against Moshe Rabbeinu, so too the Rambam said Lashon hara against Eretz Yisrael. And what was the underlying connection between the two? The answer is Miriam failed to appreciate the unique character of her brother Moshe Rabbeinu as a lovely par excellence. In a similar vein, the Rav said, that's exactly what these Meraglim failed to recognize, the singular character of Eretz Yisrael. And that's really the beautiful aspect of this Pasha, of Pasha Shlach, that shows the singularity of Eretz Yisrael. I've mentioned this already many times, and I'll mention it again. I have a connection with Hagoyin of Rigdal Emesol Shlita, the Rav of the Artikah, of the Old City. And his love for Eretz Yisrael is absolutely unparalleled. I never saw him on anything like it. Constantly he speaks about the beauty of Eretz Yisrael and how Eretz Yisrael is so unique, and especially unique in terms of the siyata d'shmaya that people have living here in Eretz Yisrael. In terms of the hashkocha of Hashem is part of Eretz Yisrael. Here I'm surrounded by nisim, surrounded by miracles. I don't see the same miracles, with all due respect, in Flatbush or in Great Neck or in Muncie or in Teaneck or Chicago, or in L.A., and not even in Boca. I just don't see those miracles. And here in Eretz Yisrael, I'm literally surrounded by miracles. Nisim gluyim, on an ongoing basis. There's no question that without Nisim, we wouldn't be able to survive here, even for a moment. So, I think that the short time left that you have here in Eretz Yisrael, you have to continue to soak up the ruchaniyut, the spirituality of Eretz Yisrael, the beauty of Eretz Yisrael, and halavai that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bless all of you, be'ez Hashem, with siyata d'shmaya and everything you do, but even more siyata d'shmaya, that eventually you'll be able to hopefully even come back and live in Eretz Yisrael. And if you decide to do so, bli neder, please tell me, I will greet you at the airport. I'm not exaggerating. I will do so, bli neder, I'll try to greet you at the airport exactly in the best way I possibly can. And certainly I would hug you unquestionably. Just to come to Eretz Yisrael, I should hug you in general, just that the corona has prevented me from doing anything. Corona wreaked havoc in my life. But I'm so in love with Eretz Yisrael, and to me, it has changed my life dramatically in the last 25 years. I'm here 25 years, and I'm 26 years, 10 years ago. And I think the same should apply to you. Look what happened to you. You came outstanding, you've been touring Eretz Yisrael, outstanding. And you're just moving. Le'ela, le'ela, higher and higher. That's what I see for every one of you, collectively, and Allah, Be'ezah Hashem, because both should give the Siyata d'Shmaya to ultimately return to Eretz Yisrael, to live here, Mitzvah Hashem, to make it your home, and thereby, you have so many talents and so much to offer all of us living here in Eretz Yisrael. One of the things that Anglos have, you may not appreciate it, is called balance. This country needs a lot of balance. You know what I'm talking about? There are a lot of extremism here. I came to Eretz Yisrael to provide balance to the country. Do you think I've been successful? I think so. Eminently successful. According to my humble opinion, I'm slightly biased. Hope you don't mind. And you guys, Barobam Hakasmelach, you do that even more. Yes, Hashem. So you can come outstanding in the Torah, at the same time, yes, Hashem, you'll have the Siyata d'Shmaya to come back and hopefully you should be able to even live here. Rabban holds a mitzvah say that you're obligated to live in Eretz Yisrael. Bein digdoli hasfardin, bein digdoli ashkenazim, subscribe to it. Hagoyin Rav Ovadia Zatzal was in love with Eretz Yisrael. I heard him speak about it a number of times. None of you was able to see him or hear him. He was a giant beyond giant. And I heard another Golem, Nevinsol Shlita, Brother Chaim Aruke, also speaks about Eretz Yisrael so many times, and so beautifully. There's so much Ruach in it here. That's what counts ultimately, values and spirituality. That's what makes our life as Jews so beautiful and so wonderful. So Halavai, all of us should be Zofe and Mitzvah Hashem to come back, and Halavai, we should be able to, as a result of that, create an Achdus, a greater Achdus in Klal Yisrael, that will Mitzvah Hashem bring about the coming Mashiach. There we are, name of a man.